How We Built Our Team is a podcast that talks to successful founders and leaders in the hiring and recruiting space to learn their strategies for building and scaling their teams. From attracting and impressing top talent to creating a strong company culture, our guests will share their insights and experience on what it takes to build your dream team. In today's episode, we talk to our very own Max Kolisch, CEO of Dover, about hiring your founding team. We talk through the importance of building a strong network, pitfalls when hiring executives, how to hire your founding engineer, and even the future of AI and recruiting. This conversation covers a ton of ground and is full of a lot of insights into what strategies to use and mistakes to avoid when scaling your early team. So tune in.
All right. So welcome back to How We Built Our Team, Dover's podcast. Today, we have a very special guest to interview. We wanted to bring on our own CEO, Max Kolisch. And prior to founding Dover, he was a founder at Zinc. He earned a bachelor's degree in computer science from MIT. And wanted to also share a little bit about Dover. Our mission is to help every company in the world build an amazing team. And Dover is the ultimate recruiting solution for startups. So there are a combination of software and services. We enable any business leader to run a data-driven hiring process, create an incredible candidate experience, and hire the right talent fast. So Max, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me on.
Anything else you want to add to your background, or did we cover it?
No, that sounds great. I'm excited to get into it.
Awesome. So let's kind of dive right in. Why did you choose to found a recruiting company like Dover?
Yeah, so Dover's my second company. Before this, I was working on Zinc, which was an e-commerce automation company. And I think a lot of people actually get into recruiting because they have a lot of difficulty recruiting in their past lives. So for me, definitely hiring was really hard. It was really tedious. And then I know my co-founders both have that same experience at their previous companies as well with Georgia and Misha. So that was a big part of it, was like personal pain, which is always a good reason to explore a startup idea. I think that's why you see so many recruiting companies, is because so many people have had that experience. At my last company, we basically did these really, I call it like white glove automation, which is like pretty complex business processes that usually need to be done by a human. Even at that point in time, the tech was advanced enough where you can actually automate a significant chunk of it. And when looking at recruiting, it was kind of the same thing, where there's so many things that need to go right behind the scenes and need to be done manually behind the scenes for a successful recruiting process. So I looked at that and that was actually pretty exciting to me. So we said, hey, what if we could just automate large swaths of this process to make, you know, recruiters and make business leaders and founders and stuff more productive, more effective by not having to do all these like 50 tedious tasks around, you know, scheduling somebody or rescheduling somebody or, you know, sending 50 emails in a day. All those things seemed like something that was pretty right for automation. So that was kind of where the original idea came from. And then, you know, within 2 or 3 months, we had something built out. And then from there, it was sort of more customer pull than anything else.
I know that the very early days of Dover looked like kind of doing whatever customers needed in the recruiting space as part of consulting agreements to really deeply understand the problem space. What did you and the other co-founders learn through that process about where you could be most helpful?
Yeah, thankfully, Anvisha did a lot of the initial customer success, the very day-to-day, especially because it was very operationally intensive at the time. Because we hadn't built out the product to automate most of it. So Anvisha stepped up in a big way and was like, I'll manage all the customers. I'll take care of all that. I think we had this general idea of, you know, hey, recruiting's tedious, let us do it for you. There's a lot of different kind of companies and types of tools that come into play. We said, hey, let's just sort of bite off the whole piece, the whole chunk of recruiting, and help you with the entire process end to end as the first part. And then from there, we wanted to see, you know, can we start somewhere? Is there a particular subcomponent of recruiting that's like more tedious than other components? For us, that ended up being sourcing. And so we dived right into that, I would say, for the first like 3 to 6 months of the company, even though we did a bunch of other stuff during those consulting agreements. We did, you know, first round phone screens for companies. We did a lot of strategy. We did a lot of optimization of their existing process and like analysis and stuff like that. I think it was sort of the thing that we jumped to first, because it seemed to be the thing that everybody said, hey, this is my biggest pain point in recruiting, and I just need more of this and better sourcing.
I'm just curious to know why, when you started Dover, obviously bringing on a leadership team to build a company with you is a big decision, personally and professionally. And I'm curious to know why you brought on two co-founders and how you went through deciding who you were going to build Dover with.
Yeah, co-founders are really essential. I mean, for me, so it was a little bit easier. Me and Anvisha were really close friends since college, since like freshman year. So you know, at this point, we've known each other for 13 years or so. At that point, I guess it was like 9 years. We were housemates in San Francisco, hung out a lot, and sort of even worked on a bunch of side projects together. That's sort of my number one recommendation. Yes, when it comes to co-founders, is like, you want to start a company with somebody you're already really close friends with, already worked on some stuff with. So it kind of helps to, you know, constantly be working on Reddit projects with people, I guess, if you're thinking about starting a company in the future. But yeah, with Unbisha, we were sort of testing around some ideas. Yeah, when Dover first started, actually, there was a couple ideas before the recruiting idea. And so I actually brought her on before that. She wanted to work with me. And so she took a bet even before there was like a real thing at all built out. And then after like 2-3 months of iterating, we landed it in the recruiting phase. George joined like 6 months after that or so. I mean, George had started a recruiting company prior to Dover. And he was also best friends with Unbisha's now husband, who's also like a close friend of ours. So he was also like very closely connected. We had basically an opportunity to poach him from there. So we snagged him. We brought on George. I think it was a little more of a discussion just because we were already 6 months in and we were like, oh, is it, you know, do you want to add a co-founder like a little bit later? But after working with George for like a week or two, as a lot of people that work with George can probably attest to, he's like an absolute workhorse. And he also knew a ton about the space from, you know, 4 years of doing recruiting previously. So it was kind of a no-brainer at that point. But probably, you know, if he didn't have the close tie to us, it would have been a little bit different, right? Like I do think that first order bit of, are you friends with this person? Like, do you know them? Do you have some social ties outside of just this company?
Yeah, that makes sense, especially when you have to be like really creative and take a lot of risks in the beginning. I think it makes sense to have people in your corner that you're comfortable with in that capacity. So it was the three of you for a bit. And then obviously you had to bring on your first employee. So what was that decision like? When did you feel like you were ready for that? And what made you all three decide that you needed to start hiring for that person?
I think Juan, who was our first engineer, was pretty opportunistic. Sort of before we even raised our seed round. We were pretty good friends. He was in San Francisco and he went to MIT with us and had been beer with him over the course of a few months to like teach him on the idea of working with us. And it was very natural. I mean, he's like an incredible engineer and at his point in his career where he always sort of wanted to do something earlier stage, but he worked for companies in the past. And I thought, you know, Unbisha and the kind of person where like, if you get a chance to hire him, you should hire him. So it wasn't like, oh, we were like, let's set out and look for a first engineer. It was probably going to be, hey, if we're not hiring a job, we're probably, you know, we might not hire anybody else for another 3 months, 6 months, maybe. To have pretty big networks and like back in SF, we knew a lot of folks. So, and because we were entrepreneurs, you were able to get some really good people as our first few hires. So engineer is not like in plan. You're not like, oh, I need to hopefully be something that, you know, you found somebody that you really get along with. You found somebody that's like really going to up level the company. You found somebody that you want to go on a, you know, 4-year to 10-year journey with. So I expected engineer as well. After that, we sort of, it became a little bit more of a process. Not that, you know, we hired like one, you know, 3 months. And I was like, engineers took way longer than number 6 we hired through Dover. So that's when the product started taking end. And so we started using software for hiring, then kind of became the norm after that.
What was kind of the biggest challenge in hiring those people in the early days? Was it finding them? Was it, you know, kind of convincing them to join a company at that stage? Like,
and you know, even in hindsight of like, oh, did we get really lucky or did we like put in this really good amount of work? It was probably the close-kin was really important in the early days. The fact that we were runners, we all sort of went to school together. We had a lot of close social bonds. For that are hiring early, right, like super early stage, or you know, if you just started your company and you're thinking about your first hire in the future, I think the really actionable thing is just like smart people, which is something that takes years to do, but that's what you want to be making. I feel like this is something that I did pretty well throughout the course of, you know, college and after college, was like always something that I had gravitated to, not explicitly because I like want to study with some of them or hire them, but more just like I like hanging out with really smart people. A lot of dividends, specifically in recruiting, specifically in like finding a co-founder, operationalizing recruiting after the, you know, first 2 hires. Nobody, your first few hires from your friend group and from your network, it's really tough to hire from those sources because they're just going to say, you know, why can't you get any of your friends to do it? I don't even know you. Why would I work for you? I'd take a bet on you if you're like, you know, if you're an amazing founder that's going to build a great company, like, why can't you get like one friend to work for you? That's kind of the question that people maybe not explicitly ask, but in their head, I think sometimes. So,
it seems like the biggest takeaway for people would be just really lean into building a great network and hire from your network first. As the company grows, obviously we hired a lot of engineers first off the bat to build the product, but you start having to hire first of roles, first of sales, first of marketing. What were some of the mistakes or challenges you had when hiring for first of roles as the company grew?
Yeah, there's a lot sure that we've made. We really thought about it from like a retro perspective of, oh, here's some mistakes that we made and what we could have done differently. I think some of the successful decisions that we made that were not mistakes was hiring people with really high slope. Our company values is slope over y-intercept. So early stage, we realized, hey, we want to, you know, instead of hiring people who are like super senior at these roles and like have done it a dozen times before, we were sort of doing things, I guess, in a contrarian way right from the beginning. Where a lot of the assumptions that we were making about how recruiting should work were pretty different to the industry thought it should work, particularly things like, hey, you could actually automate things and create a much more personalized experience for people, right? Or you can create a better candidate experience through automation, lets you scale your recruiting. So long story short, we decided because we're doing all these contrarian things, you take a different approach to building the company as well. And so we really focused on hiring people with high slope over y-intercept, right? Instead of having a ton of experience, let's hire people who are just have really high growth potential. Ended up with a lot of people who were sort of new to whatever we're doing at Dover and might have not done that a lot of times before, but had really high capacity for growth and might have been earlier stage in their career. We definitely prioritized that a lot, but had like pretty formative experiences, I would say, at Dover. Now, looking back over the past, you know, 3 years since we started hiring people, that was probably a big success for us. Made Dover really enjoyable and fun to work at for me personally, was like working around really smart people who were, are really ambitious, who are learning every day. So that was sort of the success. I guess your question was definitely more about the mistakes that we made when hiring first jobs. I'm trying to think. I mean, we definitely were very deliberate in hiring for engineering, for sales, for marketing. Okay, I'll give one anecdote maybe, which reinforces that point. We did for a product function. Our first hire for that role was actually somebody who had a lot of experience as a PM. And we realized that experience wasn't actually super applicable. It was for a bigger company. And so this person had worked at a big company, like a brand name company, and then was really good, but definitely because of the cultural aspects of Dover, where everybody was sort of figuring things out from scratch and like also very ambitious and just moving really fast. It ended up that we wish we'd preferred basically the kind of PMs that we're hiring now, or that we've hired now, which are people that really knew Dover intimately and were these early career people who were like really ambitious, and wanted to move fast. And so with those people, we've been really successful. So I guess the mistake was not following that value exactly. That's the one I'll end on here. So that's the one that comes to mind. I'm sure there are others, and with exact hiring, we definitely made our fair share of mistakes as well. So I can talk about that as well.
I'd love to hear about that. If you have any anecdotes or thoughts about mistakes and with exact hiring, I'm sure lots of founders had that experience.
Yeah, I feel like exact hiring is like really, really hard. I think there is this aspect of like pay for exact roles. Is just a lot higher. If you're really good, it's just a lot higher at bigger companies. So you do get a little bit of adverse selection at startups. You have to find people who are either, you know, really, really believe in this company and are willing to take a massive, you know, hit. Usually execs are also later in their careers. And so their people just become less, you know, more risk averse as they get later in their careers. So I think it's like it's just a small pool, right? And so what ends up happening is there's adverse selection of the people that do want to be execs at tiny companies, either, you know, the great ones like really believe in this company, really are risk seeking, but there's just a majority of people who have sort of not, you know, just sort of, I don't know, failed up, for lack of a better word, in some cases, that end up in these roles. And so that makes hiring really, really, really hard. And a lot of these people are really good at sort of interviewing. They're really good at, you know, presenting themselves. But oftentimes there's this real sort of organ rejection component, which happens in startups where you've built this team and then you hire an exec who's like, you know, sharpshooter and a smooth talker and, you know, they seem great on paper. And then you bring them in and there's like a cultural rejection of that person, or that person is just not doing the things that, that, you know, like make sense for the business, or, they're not like on the same wavelength as the rest of the team. And oftentimes, you know, and I sort of sympathize with the execs in this position, because oftentimes to be an effective exec, you just need to, like, it does take time to ramp, right? Even more so than an IC role where you can get quick wins, you know, week one, you can like ship some code, or you can like, you know, write a blog post, or you can, you know, whatever, right? Like, there's a lot of stuff that you can do. And to be fair, execs, good execs should do that too. They should definitely like get their hands dirty with IC stuff. And that's a big red flag in our case. We've seen that a couple of times where we've had execs who were like allergic to doing IC work. And that was like an immediate sort of red flag that led to us firing that person. But it's really hard to suss out in the interview process. Even, you know, in our experience, like we made that exceptionally clear. We were very adamant about, you know, making it clear what our culture is like, preparing this person, or a few people actually, and still there was a little bit of a mismatch of expectations. So exec hiring is really hard. I mean, there's a wealth of advice on the internet about this, and from like lots of good VCs have published this, because usually VCs are the ones that are sort of helping founders do this. They've seen it a lot. I guess my like slightly contrarian piece of advice is you probably don't need execs for longer than you think. You have, execs are very high variance, right? So you might get somebody who really slows your company down, and who really, you spend 6 months hiring, 3 months onboarding, and then they're not like getting the metrics that, you know, hitting the goals that you're setting out for them and stuff like that. It's really high variance. Obviously they could be really successful too. But I feel like early on in your company's life, you have all these other high variance things that are going on. Like, you know, you're trying to find product market fit, you're trying to like just make it in all these basic ways, that I feel like a lot of companies just end up hiring execs too early. When I say execs, it really depends. There's some people who have a VP title that, you know, aren't a functional VP. It's really an exec is somebody who's like really going to run that function for you and take ownership for it and almost veto power on anything other parts of the company want to do, or the CEO, or even, right? Like they're sort of the strategic leader of that space and make the final call on a lot of things. So anyways, that I would say like holding off on hiring execs is actually quite a good strategy until again, in the spirit of iteration, right? You oftentimes want to iterate a bunch of times before you land on an exact strategy for, and that iteration is a lot easier if you have scrappy people who are, you know, experienced at a wide variety of things and like eager to learn and try different things. And then once you figure that out, you have a lot more success because you know exactly what kind of exec you need to hire. So I've seen a lot of companies do this, like mess this up by hiring execs too early.
Yeah. I think one thing I'm hearing too is that you learned one of our company values came out of those early experiences, like with some of the mistakes we made or some of the interview experiences you had, like slope over Y intercept. And I know that that's something we recommend a lot of early stage companies double down on, is getting straight about their values and posting those somewhere publicly, because that's really important for employer branding. So I'm curious to know how you all came up with our company values at Dover, and then how you came to a consensus across the three of you. What was that process like? How did you guys brainstorm? How did you guys come to a conclusion? Curious to hear.
Yeah, we actually ran a process for our company values, which was cool. Our chief of staff at the time sort of ran it, and then Visha like drove it as well. I think we wanted to take it really seriously because we did see and hear that it's a super important thing that you can do early on when you're like 5 to 10 people to really mold your company. And it's a little bit, it's less like a prescriptive thing where you're saying, oh, here's like all the things you want to be. It's more just your reflect. It's actually an easier exercise than it sounds, because really most of the exercise is like reflecting on the culture that already exists and on exactly what components of it people really like and that keeps them at Dover and drives them to Dover and that they like telling prospects about and makes their eyes light out and things like that. And then just distilling them into a few key things that are, you know, memorable. And I do think those tropes are really important within the company. Like we have a lot of, you both know, we have a lot of like tropes within the company that are like black emojis or, you know, comments that people make around company values, which is really, you know, it seems like a small thing, but it's actually really nice in terms of reinforcing those things in the back of your head so that when you're making decisions, you're like, oh, which trade-off do I make? Okay, maybe I actually should go in this direction. And because that's our company value. So I strongly recommend everybody do it. We have a blog post about how we did it. We followed a few different, you know, recommendations that exist online about how to run a values exercise. We did it with more of the team. I think the whole team was involved at a time. I think we were like 10 or 12 people maybe. And it was actually like, it was a couple of weeks process. There was a couple of meetings, a couple of brainstorming sessions, and then a distillation. I won't get into the details here, but it was essentially, the structure was large group exercise where everybody kind of talks about what they like about Dover, what attracts people and stuff like that. Then we had some smaller group meetings where we tried to distill those down, find similarities between the things that people said. We had a couple sessions around like revising the wording, making sure it covered all the aspects that we liked, and sort of taking that to a, you know, it was pretty consensus driven, I guess, between the first five or six people that ultimately, the first five or six employees at Dover who ultimately like made the call. So it was a pretty rigorous exercise. I'm really glad we did it. It was also just fun for that team to be a part of that, I felt like. So everybody really enjoyed it and felt included.
Yeah, I feel like that plays into not one of our stated kind of company values, but our value around hiring of getting everyone involved in the process. And like, everybody needs a say on who they work with. And I think that's helped us build a really strong culture. You mentioned before, Dover's done a really great job of hiring people from kind of non-tech or non-traditional backgrounds, like from the world of opera, theater, less non-traditional, but many, many consultants at our company or ex-consultants. How did that initially come to be? And like, how do you think that founders should approach identifying the types of talent they need or that they're open to?
Yeah, I'll talk about how that happened for us. So it's funny because there's kind of two different forces at play for each of those. So for the theater folks, we have a lot of, yeah, people who are, you know, ex-Broadway or professional musicians in various ways. That was really a referral situation where we got a little lucky. This is not like general advice. It's just a funny story where we hired a few people from that industry. And then during COVID, a lot of the people who were doing live performances and stuff like that couldn't perform. So there's a lot of folks who are looking for roles. And what we realized from our first few people who are now, you know, very seasoned within the business is these people are like super, you know, they're very, they took their talents in this direction of like music. And it's like, oh, that's not applicable to like, you know, startups or tech or whatever, but it actually really, really is. A lot of the things that, you know, the things that you have in common are like, you know, determination, right? Like talent honed in a particular direction, just like willingness to work hard to get really good at something. I think those are all things that we really, really value at Dover. And so it turns out it was, you know, hindsight is kind of obvious, but we were like, oh yeah, this, you know, a lot of the stuff that we do at Dover is like pretty tough, but learnable by somebody who's like sufficiently motivated, smart, and just excited about this. So that's why we leaned into that talent pool really hard, is we just found a lot of really, really smart people who, you know, again, have been spending like 10 or 15 years studying classical music in various ways and performing arts. It was pretty easy to say, you know, for them to say, hey, this is actually really exciting. This is, part of me, I was like, well, you're giving up on your dreams. But a lot of them were like, actually, we like this a lot more. And I was like, okay, that's cool. I feel better. And obviously pays better and stuff like that. So I do think there's a, it was a cool learning, to find that, a lot of those folks are just really, really good at anything we threw their way. And then their responsibility kept expanding in scope over time. And now they're, again, some of the most senior people in the business. So that's part of it. On the consultant side, I think it was a little bit different. The reason we hired a lot of consultants was actually a Dover reason. One of the things that, when we really started scaling up that side of the house, which is our customer success team, who we called it engagement managers at the time. And, you know, they all rolled into all different parts of the business. Katie was one of these people, as well as a bunch of people who went into, you know, biz ops, product, finance, some remain CSMs or customer success people, and all sorts of stuff. So the reason that worked really well for us was this is the time when we actually built out Dover to some degree. And one of the things that Dover really lets you do well is to figure out what your ideal talent pool for a role is. And so we actually sort of iterated on a bunch of different types of roles and ultimately landed on, hey, we like management consultants are actually really great for a culture fit, as well as for being able to ramp up quickly on the kinds of work we wanted to do, as well as having customer experience. So even though they were not traditionally, you know, the types of people that would, you know, do an engagement manager role, we called it engagement manager because that's a consulting term more or less. But it was partially like a customer success, product, ops, and strategy role. And it was a combination of those things. So we really found good job market fit with that candidate pool. And then once you find job market fit, Dover lets you sort of turn the crank really aggressively. And so we find a ton of great people. I've probably done, you know, 40, 50, tech screens. I remember I was doing sort of the second round interview. I've done like 40 or 50 of those at this point. And, you know, a lot of them were great. We hired the really amazing ones. And so that was just, I think, more of an aspect of, hey, we found a really good job market fit. Let's scale this thing up and get a bunch of great people. And so that's what we did. I think there was a second part to your question also that I might've forgotten.
I think that covers it enough, I think. Kind of on that same vein, we spent a lot of time hiring people more for their slope over kind of their past experience and looking for people who had that kind of hunger and ambition. But I feel like those people wouldn't have been as successful at Dover had the culture not been one of encouraging people to kind of wear a lot of hats, to work on different parts of the business, to kind of say, hey, I'm really interested in learning about X, and just taking on projects in those areas. How would you describe you plus, you know, the other founders' approach to career progression at Dover?
I think so the honest answer is, for startups, if they tell you they care about it, it's a little bit of a lie. Just because the number one thing about a startup is like making the startup work. I think there's a lot more responsibility on employees and individuals at startups to figure out their own career progression. I think a lot of the career progression question happens when you join, which is, hey, are you joining a cool startup that you really believe in, that you're really excited to work for on a day-to-day basis? And are you willing to like do whatever it takes there, right? That's a big sort of question that both, I guess the company should look for people who are like that as well, and filter in people who are like that, but the person should genuinely want that, right? Anybody joining a startup should genuinely want to sort of have their fate determined by the success or failure of the startup. Afterwards, I think startups give you a really, really good opportunity to control your career progression more so than any other company. We've seen is that people constantly take on new and more responsibilities and gain more and more responsibility across the company over time. So people are very self-selecting, whereas, you know, at a bigger company, it might be a little bit more political, where you have to, you know, with the right people and do this special thing that might not be best for the business. With startups, there's always opportunity to have massive business impact and for everybody to see it pretty clearly. And then also for you to then, you know, as a result, be just a critical, like a visible and critical member of the team. So that's kind of how I think about it, which is like, on the one hand, kind of a lazy answer, because usually when people ask me about it, I'm like, it's kind of on you. Like, here's some examples of things that people at our company have done that have been really impactful, that have been long lasting, that have been like real change drivers in the company. I kind of throw it back at them. And the real career progression, or I guess not real, but like the fake career progression, which is like your title goes up or whatever, and your salary goes up. Those things happen naturally as the company scales. So if the company's doing well, then those things happen. If the company's not doing well, even if you're doing a good job, you're counting, you know, SOL. Your real fate is really determined by the success of the company, which is why you have to make that decision when you're joining in the first place. But you need to take ownership for it yourself. There's always big business impact that you can have if you know where to look. And if you don't know where to look, very easy to ask. Very easy to ask literally anybody at the company. One last thing I'll say about that, I guess, is there's always like a amount of responsibility. There's some roles that just require a large amount of day-to-day responsibility where it's like, hey, you're going to, you know, do this role and you need to like fill, like this thing needs to get done and you need to do it. And if you're clear how to do it, you just have to do it and not mess it up, basically. And those roles, like if you just do that, you will probably not have a lot of career progression. You need to sort of always be automating yourself, simplifying the process such that you have more time in the day or more of whatever kind to do stuff that is above and beyond, right? Above and beyond whatever the baseline of your role requires. I think people say that all the time, is like, you want to go above and beyond. But sometimes I think people get caught up in the day-to-day of just doing their basic job that they don't have enough time to do that. And I think the most successful people at startups are people who like automate or, you know, figure out how to just do faster the basics of their job and do it obviously with high quality, but then quickly go above and beyond that and take on increasingly more and more responsibility over time.
I feel like as people are probably thinking about, okay, how do I hire people for their slope and their ability to grow and their ambition? What are some of the ways that you would assess that when meeting with candidates? Obviously, some people might be really good on paper. What are some of like the tactical questions that you would ask to try to suss that out without, you know, sitting down and working with them for a week?
That's an interesting question. So Working with them for a week is definitely helpful, by the way. If you can do that, I recommend doing it. I think there's a big stigma around contract to hire. We've done contract to hire for some roles. It works great if both the company and the candidate can allow for it, which is not always the case. Usually not the case, but if it is the case, I would recommend trying that. In terms of how do you find that people have high slope when they join your company? It's tricky. It's tricky to filter that in a one-day interview. One thing that I would look for is general ambition and success in their career already, which is pretty straightforward. Like if they already have had high slope in the past 2 years, 3 years before they're interviewing for your company, probably means they're going to continue to have high slope. So that's a thing that we looked for with a lot of roles is people who have either risen through the ranks of their company or taken on more influence within the company. That's something, a thing that I do a lot is like suss that out in reference checks. I would say those are always very helpful where I ask those exact questions that I was just talking about of like, did this person take on additional responsibilities? Did this person like push hard or did they just treat this as a job? Did they like clearly have a hunger for more, right? For like whatever, being more successful. So I do think, I mean, I don't know. It's always very weird, I think, for founders to think about that because I think to be a founder and to be, you know, at the point where you're like hiring a bunch of people, you're probably just naturally that kind of person. And so you might be like, who are there other people? Like, what do you mean? This doesn't make sense, right? Do those people exist that just aren't really hungry and don't want to, you know, work that hard? Like, yeah, that's most people. Most people are, not that that's a bad thing. I think most people are just content saying like, yeah, I'm just going to do my job and, you know, go home and get my paycheck and stuff. And I think that's totally fine. I just think that when you're a startup, you can't afford to hire any of those people. I think it's really important to sort of keep your eyes peeled for that. One thing that I look for is like my interviews with this person, are they the kind of person who's asking like, I know there's this thing around thoughtful questions of like how, you know, you can do a bunch of research and like prepare, like asking the right questions or whatever that you should be asking. But then there's like actually thoughtful questions where you can tell as the interviewer that person is really putting themselves in the shoes of this role and like thinking through the reality of being there and then thinking through the impact they can have. I think it's tricky to like, this usually happens in the end of the interview when you're, you know, you're like, do you have any questions for me sort of thing? And there's a big difference between people who are asking questions just for the sake of asking questions because they know they have to because it's an interview and they're going to, you know, that sounds smart if they don't. And people who are literally like processing all the things that you just talked about, thinking through themselves in this role, thinking through how they can have more impact on your company. And I do think that that goes a really long way because then you break through that fourth wall a little bit of like, okay, this is an interview, but like you're really thinking about this. Like we're in a relationship now and you're really thinking through like, you're asking genuine questions as if like I'm your manager or whatever. It's really nice. So I think that's another sort of selection criteria. Yeah, we definitely had a hiring freeze for the past like 9 months. So I honestly haven't interviewed in a while, but we didn't have a lot of really thoughtful resources on this. Maybe we can publish them at some point of like interview questions around specific behavioral to get at certain behavioral traits. I do think again, a large part of it is like, you know, if they've already been in the workforce for like 2-3 years, usually there's enough examples you can find about them sort of trying to be higher slope and trying to just go above the normal, you know, career trajectory that people might have. And I mean, to state the obvious, there's also certain companies that you might work for, have already worked for, that would indicate that you have a high slope willingness to take high risk and high responsibility. So there is some aspect of that as well.
That was a very thorough answer. So thank you. One kind of final question before we shift over to our rapid fire questions. So shifting gears a little bit, looking ahead, obviously, you know, you're kind of like a self-described huge AI fan. And Dover is investing a ton in building an AI now, as we have been for the last few years. How do you envision the recruiting landscape changing over the next couple of years with this kind of huge inflection point that we're at right now?
Yeah. AI, the AI stuff is totally massive. Even if it's not, I've been sort of, sounding a little alarmed, hyping it up, let's say. For the past like 3 years, Dover was one of the earliest users of GPT-3 in production, which came out in 2020. We used it for a bunch of, you know, small tasks that we needed done. Because again, a lot of recruiting is like operational. There's like 100 things that need to happen behind the scenes. So we use it for stuff like, you know, if somebody's resume says Google Inc., when you're emailing that person, you wouldn't say Google Inc., you would just say Google. So like company name cleaning, that was like one of the first use cases I remember that we just coded up, which a pretty simple one, but there's like, you know, you can imagine like 50 or 100 other things like that, that there's really cool applications for it for. I feel like, yeah, AI is interesting because it's like, there's obviously it's super hyped up now and everybody's on that train after ChatGPT, which is really exciting. Even if it's not AI or general intelligence or whatever, if it can't solve the most complex problems ever, I think what's already like 100% clear that there's going to be massive disruption in the workforce and the way people do their jobs. Like, I'm 100% certain about that. And I think people debate about like, oh, is it sentient or can it do all these other things? Like, it doesn't matter. You can literally go use ChatGPT right now or GPT-4 right now to like solve tasks that, you know, 2 months ago, if you asked me, I'd be like, oh yeah, that's like impossible to do, right? With even the latest AI models, which is crazy. So it's progressing at a really rapid rate. I think it'll have a pretty big impact on the recruiting landscape. I said, when we started Dover, one part of our vision was that recruiting is really complicated and it shouldn't have to be. And the part of the reason that buddies build really big recruiting teams and try to buy like 10, 15 tools to like run a recruiting process is because it's that complicated. But in theory, if you go back like, you know, 30, 40 years, that wasn't the case, right? You would just have a manager who was like hiring people on their own and sort of run it, you know, it was a lot harder, right? But you would put up the ad, you would sort of interview the people. And with the proliferation of like more data, internet, lots of recruiting tools, like it just became a hassle. And so all this stuff was way harder to deal with. Part of Dover's vision was to say, hey, the hiring manager should actually be really involved in the recruiting process. After all, this person is going to work for you, right? And I think that's a really, really key factor to building a really good team. Whether you're an early stage company, late stage company, like, do you want to be happy at work? You should be involved heavily with the people that you're hiring, understand how you can make your hiring process better to get better people. So part of our vision was like, or one of the things we sort of said was, hey, what if a hiring manager could just spend like 10 minutes, 15 minutes a week and recruiting was just handled for them, which to be fair is like how it works when you have, you know, a big team of recruiters at your company who are really good, who are taking off a lot of the work off your plate. I think the thing that we're going to see with AI and the thing that we're seeing a lot with like this new concept of agents and stuff like that is that all of this becomes a lot more possible. Every person can now have like a skilled knowledge worker who is sending emails or doing some basic research on the web. And everybody's a lot more sort of okay with that idea of like, oh yeah, I have this, you know, agent that's kind of operating for me and being my executive assistant in a lot of ways. But I think that's something that we're going to see is hiring managers, founders being open to saying, hey, I'm just going to run recruiting for us, right? I'm just going to manage this whole process. And I have a sourcing agent, I have a scheduling agent, and all these things are just kind of happening for me. I do think we're still a little bit of a ways away there. But honestly, like with the rate that things are changing at, that's like on the order of months, not even years. I think by the end of 2023, we're going to see that as a big paradigm shift. And a lot, this doesn't apply to just recruiting. I think this applies to all the tangential tasks that somebody needs to deal with at a company, right? That aren't like their direct specific job responsibility. They're going to have agents that are helping them with this. And to be clear, I think recruiting teams will also have the same thing, right? Recruiting teams will be ultra strategic. They'll probably be leaner, but they'll be a lot more strategic in the sense that they'll just have all of these small things delegated, then all these tedious and sort of operational pieces of recruiting delegated out to these autonomous agents, or just, you know, autonomous agents sound scary, but it's really just like a piece of automation that is smart enough to, you know, write a really compelling email or, you know, pull out the scheduling availability from somebody's calendar and then like, you know, reschedule somebody, things like that. I think it's going to be a lot more prominent. Dover's obviously working on some of those things.
Yeah, quick plug. We are releasing an AI assistant, a recruiting assistant, which is really exciting. And I know the whole company is really excited about that. So you can sign up for our waitlist. We'll put some of that info in the show notes. But that brings us to our rapid fire question round. So Max, please strap in because these are all really hard hitting questions and there are wrong answers. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so the first question we have is, what is your favorite interview question to ask candidates?
Oh man, it's been so long. This might be a basic one that a lot of people ask, but what's the thing that you're most proud of in the last like, you know, 5 years, whether it's like a personal achievement or a professional achievement? I'm asking that just because it's lets the person be like not humble. And just like sort of express what they're really proud of. It shows what they care about based on what they choose to highlight. And it also shows that, you know, usually people highlight a thing that they worked really hard for or like, you know, pushed really hard for, which is also a quality that we obviously filter on a lot.
Yeah, Nice. What's an all-time favorite book that you'd recommend?
All-time favorite. I feel like I read more nonfiction recently. My Flying Car is probably one that I read a few months ago. That was really good. It's a Shred Press book, and it's about how various regulation and societal sort of feelings and norms affect the rate of innovation, especially in the last 50 years in the U.S., specifically when it comes to air travel, energy, and a few other things. That it's like a really, really, it's a pretty technical book in some cases, but it's also super accessible. So it's like really perfect for somebody who wants to learn more about why we can't build good things that often in the physical world.
Cool. Where do you physically go in the world to spark inspiration?
I don't really go places for inspiration, but I do, as you both know, I pace around a lot. I tend to, when I'm on a call, I realize I think best when I'm like pacing around. And sometimes people are like, why is there nobody in front of the Zoom screen or whatever? So I do a lot of calls with video off, especially if it's a brainstorming call. I guess the other thing that I do is if I'm trying to think through a particular topic or something, I usually try to get somebody on the phone from the team, and I'll just like be like, hey, can we talk through this? I just want to like shoot some ideas at you, get your feedback. And, you know, it's a little bit more of a brainstorming session. I feel like talking about things is my happy place, as opposed to just like sitting and thinking in silence. I feel like.
Yeah, definitely can attest that's true. What is something that you're really looking forward to right now?
Oh, shameless plug. We are launching a free AI powered ATS, which is really exciting. I think that's happening in the next couple of weeks. So that's probably the biggest thing we're looking forward to, or I'm looking forward to. And I think that's going to be awesome. We're really leaning into a free product strategy right now at Dover, where we're giving away lots of stuff for free. We're giving away as much as possible of the software that makes our products for free. So if you're just starting to hire, or if you're like scaling up your recruiting and you want to, you know, save money, especially right now, check out some of our stuff. We already have a few free products that help you with sourcing, that help you with reporting and just like analyzing your data. And we now have we'll soon have a free product that is your ATS, just the first piece of recruiting software that you basically ever need.
Awesome. Thank you so much for a thoughtful discussion. Where should people go to come to you or follow along with Jover's journey?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter, on LinkedIn, just Max Kolish. I do a lot of posting on LinkedIn recently, as Magda and Katie know, since y'all are helping me a lot with it. So we're sharing a lot of, we're digging deep into our data and trying to share a lot of insights with folks about what works in recruiting, common myths and misconceptions and things like that. I would say there's a lot of recruiting content out there. If you're interested in like a data-driven approach and an evidence-based approach, then check ours out. We've worked with 500 customers at this point and on thousands of jobs, made thousands of hires. So we have a pretty good data size of our recruiting that can help people in a way.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
How We Built Our Team is produced by Dover, a recruiting operations platform that helps you attract and engage the best talent. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts.